small child when I had an uncle that brought an old CPM machine over to the house and said, you know, go at it, have fun.
That is once again Marissa Hamilton. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here in the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Once again, we bring back Marissa's old episode into a two-part full version so that you can get the complete version of our conversation. But we're going to start once again, as we often do, with those early years.
And I think I was just trying to figure out how to use it. I didn't know what it was. It just was a machine and it had this instruction manual. And I was just trying to type in commands and get something to print.
Get something to do something. Yes.
Something to do something.
My earliest programmatic habits were, we had a Commodore 64 and I wanted it to play a game that I was reading about in a magazine. And in those days, they would just print the source code to the game in the magazine. And if you were patient enough and put in all the words right, then magically a game was created. And I had no idea what I was doing. It was just purely put the words in the machine, hopefully some weird maze game type thing comes out. I think it actually made me kind of not like computer programming at first because I kept getting syntax errors without even having to really understand what a syntax error was. So thankfully, the web brought me back to the fold. So then, if this is what you always wanted to do, how did you get introduced to Salesforce itself?
That's a really interesting story.
Okay.
It was 2009. Mm-hmm. I had been laid off from IBM. Mm-hmm. It was one of the big sweeps that they had throughout Software Group when they were making major cuts in the U.S. Workforce across a bunch of different divisions. And my husband and actually we worked together in the same group, mm-hmm. actually a couple of cubes down from each other.
Oh, wow.
And we saw it coming. The economy had just not been doing so well. And we just were kind of biding our time and trying to like hold out hope that, yeah, we won't make this cut. But yeah, indeed we were cut. Mm-hmm. And during the time that we were laid off, there's a lot of different things that happened. But we went ahead and just decided that, hey, we're just going to take this opportunity. The economy's in the toilet. Jobs are scarce. We're going to start a business. Mm. And so we were just out in the neighborhood walking around and saw a neighbor out and yelled over and said, hey, we're both out of work. If you know anybody that needs anybody technical, let us know. He yelled back, okay. Kept walking. A couple of weeks passed by. Got a phone call, and it was the neighbor,
his wife's
former project manager, who now had gone and started another business, had another friend that needed a technical person. And I know that, again, I think these days technical, like quote unquote technical, is a loaded term.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave her a call, and she said, you know, was working on some AV programming. And she says, so, you know, do you think this is something you can do? And I'm like, well, I've never done any AV programming. And I'm actually, I can code, but, that's not my strong suit. My strong suit is delivery and project management.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask Mike, my husband. And so we talked about it. And he's like, I don't think that's really what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So she says, okay, that's cool. Well, she says, I also have this other project I'm working on with this thing called Salesforce.
Really?
So I was like, okay, never heard of it. What is it? Is it like a sales tool? And she's like, well, it's like a CRM. I'm like, okay, sure. Why not? And that was it. That was my first project. It was a new implementation for a wealth management firm. A lot of data, a lot of scrubbing of data, user training, verification. And, you know, of course, I was intensely curious because I was like, this is all in a browser. How can this be happening? Is this what the cloud is? Like, I've never seen anything like this. I just came from, you know, like over 9 years at IBM. We were doing embedded Java and all the micro little, you know, microprocessor, you know, JVMs for you know, embedded devices and the early generation smartphones and smart devices. And again, this was a whole other thing. Like I have heard about it, but I never had touched and felt it or seen what it looked like. And so, of course, I was looking at like view source in the browser. Like, what is this? How is the data? How is this secure? And, I was just really, really curious.
Yeah.
So that's my first exposure. And that was back in 2009. And I just fell in love. I mean, it not in the traditional sense, not like the love at first login, but I just was so curious, and it was so different from anything that I had ever worked on that I just felt like I need more of this. Where else can I get more of this tool called Salesforce?
Nice. Nice. Yeah. No, I've had other guests. I think Corey Snow comes to mind, who they just had this like aha moment of going from, you know, traditional full stack and just kind of the way things were, and then working with Salesforce and just sort of being like, of course, this is the way we're going to do these things. It solves so many problems. Mm-hmm. Like, did you feel from a logistics and product management point of view, did you have that kind of feeling where it was just like, this is what I want to work with for like the rest of my career?
Not immediately. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. The thing that really struck me is that having been around, you know, these hardcore assembler engineers, my husband, again, he's also a software engineer developer, had been working on embedded C for many years, was really trying to make the shift over to enterprise Java. He had been working on the micro edition of Java. Mm-hmm. And so we were just both really fascinated by like the cloud, because everybody was talking about it, but being able to like see it in action, like do something and run a business and run this whole application. We just found it. I found it incredibly fascinating. And I love the fact that you could create an application without actually having to write any code. Mm-hmm. And so within the matter of months, I was actually able to build something, implement it, and the business was using it. And to me, that was just like revolutionary in 2009. And then to find out that, oh, this company's been around since 1999. And I'm like, mind blown. It's like, where have I been? And I was like, oh, yeah, I was at IBM. I had my head in a drawer of smartphones and circuit boards. And, you know, it just was a whole other universe for me. And yeah, I've been lost in it ever since.
Well, I think that's a really interesting angle, because I know I have a lot of friends who are like traditional Java developers, and, you know, they come from this world of, you know, unyielding power where they can kind of make the server do whatever they want. And if they want to bring back 3 million rows for their SQL server, then gosh darn it, like that's what they're going to do. And they walk into the world of like Apex and Sockle, where Salesforce is kind of like, you know, okay, calm down, chill. We're going to throw some governor limits your way and like kind of like build your application within those confines. But you and your husband, you're coming from a world of microprocessors and mobile and embedded code, where it's like you have to worry about memory limits and CPU, and it's like you can break things if you go too far off the rails. It sounds like Salesforce was kind of a comforting warm fire to sort of sit next to and just build things.
I don't know if we thought of it that way, but yes, we were very keen on the resource constraints of the devices we were and the environment with which we were working. And so, yeah, it was, I know for myself, because I was focused more on the delivery side. I had a, I don't want to call them my team, but I was a project manager. Although my title, we talked about titles right before the call. My official title was a staff software engineer. But my responsibility was bringing in all of the different pieces of this JVM from all over the world. So I had teams in mainland China, Taiwan, in Korea, in India, in Canada, here in the U.S. And I had to bring in all the different pieces of the JVM and then get them over to the release folks so that they could release out to our business partners. And so I was able to see like how all these different pieces fit together in order to make a delivery. And the thing that struck me with Salesforce is that it was cloud and it was an app and it was all together. And it's like instant delivery. It really struck me that, hey, this is really powerful. Like I've got to learn more about this and get into it and see like, how can I build a business on it?
Yeah.
And I was going through my MSIM or graduate school program. And that's when I actually, Peter Coffey was one of our guest lecturers.
Nice.
So total fangirl. That's when I knew it's like that was the sign I needed that, okay, this is, I am on the right path.
Nice.
I've got to find a way to do this. So
I love how there's people in our community who I just like Peter Coffey, Liam McGowan Hare, and Charlie Isaacs. It's like so many people can credit some moment in their life. Oh, and Chris Duarte comes up an awful lot, I shall also say. And it's just like, how are these people all over the world? Even in a virtual world, I keep running into Charlie Isaacs. I think that's wonderful. I do think it really speaks to the power of the early days where Salesforce is like no software, you just need your browser. I mean, no software feels a little weirder now because we've got, you know, Heroku and stuff like that, but it was that like easy delivery system. Now, tell me a little bit, because you have stayed in this world of entrepreneurship and running your own business. What was the incentive there to stay as kind of, you know, your own business as opposed to signing up with a, you know, a big consulting or anything like that?
I love running my own business. I'm a big DIYer.
Nice.
I love just the idea of doing things myself. I'm very curious. I love figuring things out. I like knowing how things work. And I really loved the process of running a business. And I do have a lot of entrepreneurial friends. Coincidentally, are a lot of our IBM friends, the people that we worked with that were also laid off at the same time. They also started their own businesses. And we used to all get together and just talk about how like, oh man, like, I got to do the taxes and like, oh, I got to go find a bookkeeper and like, oh man, somebody's got to get my website up. And, you know, all the little things about running a business.
Right.
And they're like, I just want to code or I just want to build things or, and I really was fascinated by how to run a business. My husband, he liked the, cause he's the, you know, really hardcore developer. He really just wanted to code all the time and he wanted to code whatever he wanted to code in this. You know, when you work for a very large company, you get told what you code and everything you develop and you create is theirs, right? The intellectual property part of it, it can be very constraining. And so that was one of the things that we both felt. And I felt that, okay, we can now create something for ourselves and share. And he found for himself that, you know, he really liked the whole like full-time employment, the regular steady part of it. I, on the other hand, oh my gosh, I thrive in the chaos. It's like that whole up and down where like I can like get up in the morning and there's something really great happening and I'm like, woohoo, yay. And then it's like something doesn't go so well. You're like, oh, I'm such a loser. I'm like, oh, I can't. What the hell am I thinking? I'm never going to get right. And but that's all. I mean, that's part of it. And that's part of why I love it. It gave me the opportunity to also explore things that I had always wanted to explore throughout my professional career. And I hadn't, again, I have always been in technology and I started early in my career working for an energy company that was very traditional in work environment. There's very few women. Actually, there's still very few women, but there was even fewer women and even fewer, sadly, you know, Latina common women. So just going through all that, the evolution of my career, I never fit in. I always loved what I did. I always loved my work, working in IT internally for companies. I worked for software companies, worked for IBM. I tried some startups. And I just felt like being the boss, I could do whatever I wanted. I could, if I felt like there was a better way to do something than what I had been taught, I had the latitude and the liberty to just try it and see, like, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, well, I guess I won't be doing it that way again. And I get to make the rules and I get to break the rules and I can bring other people along with me. And it's just fun, right? It's just fun. And, you know, I don't want to say we all have to work, but, you know, most people are not independently wealthy. But even if they are, it's like it's nice to have a bigger purpose. of what, how you spend your day, how you spend your time, and how you contribute, I think, just to your industry and to humanity. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as an entrepreneur, I have the opportunity to do that. And that's, you know, it's really enjoyable.
Nice. I feel like my arc was almost the complete inverse of that. I was a freelance consultant down in the wonderful city of Bloomington, Illinois, for about 2 years. And I was kind of making a profit, sort of mostly paying rent. And I knew I might be in trouble when one afternoon I successfully designed my letterhead and realizing I have no letters to send to any clients. And I'm just like that was real big waste of 4 hours where I could have been like, you know, calling people or going to businesses and things like that. And then I signed up with another company and we sort of lost a bunch of money and I fled to State Farm into the arms of the corporate world. So I appreciate you having that passion and success for it. Do you have advice for anybody? Maybe not even in just in terms of, you know, trying to do Salesforce consultancy and partnership, but like striking it out on their own and maybe wanting to have that self-entrepreneur angle to it.
Yes. So I'm going to borrow I'm going to borrow a slogan.
Okay.
It's the toughest job you'll ever love. and it's not a job though. It's, you really have to have a passion for it. You have to be very gritty because it's not for the faint of heart. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of things go sideways. The first year I did this, I only made $10,000, but I was profitable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, financially, you have to be in the place where you can do something like this. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that maybe financially can't do it. And so I'm a big advocate of like side hustle. Mm. If you can successfully side hustle and grow that side hustle, then it might work for you. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of people that are very entrepreneurial, but have difficulty making the leap from full-time employment to self-employment. Mm. One of the things that, because I do take an interest in how the business runs, I do have a really deep understanding, and I'm also really good friends with my accountant, the tax laws. And I'm super scrappy, like, you know, as far as like how, like the cost of running the business, you know, I want to make sure that I'm not filing a loss at the end of the year. And so those are things that I think, you know, it's nice to be your own boss, but it's hard too. It's hard because you also have to make the hard choices. I didn't always feel this way, obviously. I've been doing this for about 10 years now. Mm. And I had a lot of doubt early on. And I kept thinking like, gosh, I should just go get a real job. Or I'd have, you know, friends of mine, like my old IBM buddies that would say like, when are you going to get a real job? And finally, I was like, you know, at some point I actually did do a little stint where I was lured into a larger consultancy that seemed like it'd be like awesome. And what I realized is that for myself, I do not have the right personality. I'm not enough of a conformist to work for anybody else.
Okay. That's good to know. I feel like that's good self-realization.
Yes,
right there.
Yes. I am too much of a contrarian. I march to the beat of my own drummer. And that does not always bode well in a workplace because, you know, there's a certain level of conformity that's required and rule following and the way things are done. And that just like, that's not who I am as a person. So again, I tell people that, hey, if you think you want to start it, like, just do it, right? Mm-hmm. The worst thing that can happen is that it doesn't work out and then you move on, right? You shut it down and you move on. And there's no shame in that whatsoever. I feel like, again, as a business owner, there's times that things go really, really well and it's awesome. And sometimes they don't. And when they don't, you have to like tie it up, learn the lessons and then move on.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they don't, like, I love that part that you have to like love the toughest job, because I feel like there's, even when it's kind of got you down, you still have to kind of love the game a little bit, I guess, because otherwise, how are you going to stick with it, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And know when it's not working, right? Because mm-hmm. I think that there's two sides of it. There's the financial part of it, right? We all want to be able to be paid well for the work that we do. Mm-hmm. But if it starts feeling like a job, that's the other part of it. And I think as an entrepreneur, a lot of the people that I know that are self-employed or they run their own businesses, I always hesitate calling it work because to me, I love what I do. I would, with a community, the Salesforce community, one of the reasons I do that is because I really enjoy it. I love doing it. I don't need to be paid. So for my business, oh, it's really awesome that, hey, I actually get paid to do this. Like I get to do this every day and it's awesome. And I love that.
Yeah. I have heard some other people who do, you know, self-consultancies or entrepreneurs, they almost describe it more like a lifestyle choice than a professional one.
Yes, it can be. And sometimes I've had people kind of give me that like, oh, so it's a lifestyle business. And I'm like, oh, hell yes. It's my lifestyle. I'm loving it. And I make money.
I love it. Okay. So I want to talk about that community angle of it, but I also want to just pick your brain really quickly because you have tons of experience in architecture, project management, work, like you're just like working with global teams and all of this kind of stuff. How has the pandemic created new challenges for you and what kind of solutions have you been able to employ around them?
Ooh. So that's an interesting question. The pandemic, hasn't changed a lot of what I do or how I do it, other than I feel like I'm at an advantage because I've worked remotely for so many years.
You're already distributed. Yeah, I gotcha.
That transition for me was really easy. I feel like it just put me in a place where I can, like, I know how to listen if I'm, you know, if there was people that I would meet with in person in the past and I don't have the ability to do that anymore, I can still like really listen and really understand. And I'm very empathetic to like business struggles, right? Because I feel like I've been there and I joked with my sister because we also had a lot of family stuff going on during this time. Her and I joked, we're like, we've been preparing our whole lives for a moment like this. But it's like we joked about it because it was really, it's sad because there's a lot of tragedy happening right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's because we've been in these, like, again, 10 years ago when my husband and I were laid off, it was, our children were still young. You have kids in diapers and, you know, daycare and, you know, our incomes weren't what they are now. And so financially, we were afraid, like, oh, shit, you know, we're not like, we really do have to like think about our financial health at that time. And it just really makes you think differently about how you're doing what you're doing. And so bringing those lessons to this time with clients and knowing that they're afraid for their businesses, that there's the problems that they need to solve really do have a great impact because it could be the viability of their businesses if their solutions aren't implemented properly or if the solution that they've got isn't really doing it for them. Yeah. And so it hasn't really been about anything new. Again, I've worked in like currently in manufacturing and healthcare. So it's an healthcare, not in the pandemic sense, but just regular healthcare. And the solutions just, you know, everything just needs to work and it needs to do what it's supposed to be doing so that the businesses can be viable. But there hasn't, again, just in the work that I've been doing over the last 12 months, it hasn't, for me, again, it hasn't changed as much.
Yeah. And that's our show. Now tune in next week for the rest of the conversation, Marissa's favorite non-technical hobby. I want to thank Marissa for the great conversation information. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this show, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, everybody. And I'll talk to you next week.